the Business on RTE Radio 1 with AIB. You see it, we help you do it. AIB, for the life you're after.
Well, our next guest comes from a family that started out in the coal business, a family that escaped the troubles in Belfast by moving to Dublin. They also moved from coal to coiffeurs, setting up barbershops in Belfast first and then Ballyfermot, eventually becoming hairstylists to the stars. It was started by Hugh McAllister Sr. His sons Hugh and Connor have continued the trade, growing the business to dozens of franchises. Hugh McAllister of Grafton Barbers, you're very welcome. Hugh, tell me about the family background in barbering and in business, because it goes back a long way, doesn't it?
It does, Richard. Yeah, my dad, my father, was born in Cushendall up in the Glens of Antrim in 1944. Glens of Antrim is a lovely part of the world. He's turning 80 this year, so he still acts like an 18-year-old. But he left school at about 14 years old, didn't know what he wanted to do. His uncle had a barbershop up in Cushendall, Hugo McCollum. So he decided to go in and cut his teeth in the barbering trade up there. He worked there for about, I think about 2 to 3 years, and then decided his my great granddad would have had a coal business on New Lodge Road in Belfast. We weren't born at this stage, me and my brother Connor. So we moved to New Lodge Road. My dad started carrying coal for, I think, about a year and a half, 2 years, when they were heavy bags of coal, going up and down Divis flats with no lifts on. So
tough work, hard work,
not an easy job, but again, always had a bit of a drive to go back to barbering. Seen the chance of buying a shop on Church Lane in Belfast. There was 11 stores along there. In the day, you know, it was, you know, middle 60s. He'd put a couple of jacuzzi pads into it. He was kind of fairly ahead of his time when he opened there.
So he was quite entrepreneurial, not only because he wanted to own his own shop, but he wanted to do something different.
He did want to do something different. And it was, you know, the swinging 60s. Long hair was starting to come into fashion.
And the jacuzzi in the barber shop, that sounds fairly swinging.
Very swingy, very hedonistic. I don't know how busy they were, but the barber shop was certainly busy. But he ran that for a few years, and then they were getting, the street itself had been threatened a few times about a bomb that there was bombs there. And I think it went on for about 13, 14 weeks. The police were coming in saying that they had to close up every Saturday. And eventually, after 13 weeks, my dad was fed up and he said, look, you know, you can't keep on coming in and closing the shop on a busy Saturday morning. It's the busiest day of the week, because the lads that were in the barbershop had known that, you know, let's get out of here into the pub a couple of doors down, because they knew it was going to happen. But eventually there was a bomb in the street, and it blew up the whole street, taking all the shops out of it. So
whose bomb was it?
It was the IRA. Most of the shops on the street were Catholic owned shops, but there was a couple of them that were Protestant owned, but they decided to take the whole street out, or most of the street anyway. So at that stage he decided, you know, he didn't, enough was enough, when he was going to come down to Dublin. His father had come on down to Dublin. He was in the car sales business. He'd went into partnership with a fella in Phibsborough Car Sales. So he was asking my dad to come down. So my dad ended up coming down to Dublin, had a go at a barbershop in Ballyfermot, but didn't. He's actually working for somebody else. He didn't last at it. He just didn't fit into it. It wasn't for him.
How did he find Dublin?
He found it tough, I think, at the start. You know what I mean? We were renting a house down here. Interest rates were crazy high. I think they were in their 16-17%. I think he was trying to purchase a house in Wood Farm Acres. We went out doing markets at the time. I don't know how he got into that, but we went selling outsized ladies' dresses around the country. So we would have had, there was a 7-day, it would have started in the Phoenix Park in Dublin, Mitchellstown, and we would have done a circle around Ireland.
So he really was, I mean, his family were in business, and his uncle had the coal business and stuff like that. So he really wanted to be in business.
He
and
did.
Have his own shops.
I think he always wanted to work for himself type thing.
But did he settle in Dublin?
Yeah, he did eventually. Like he had met my mum. My mum was from, when we lived in New Lodge Road, my mum was from the other, she's again a Catholic, not that it makes any odds, but she was born in New Lodge Road, but her mum had passed away when she was 6 and her father had passed away when she was 7. So she was shipped off to Canada, lived there until she was 18 years old, didn't like it, and come back to Belfast where she met me, my dad and mum. met together. So the two of them, when they moved down to Dublin, they were, you know, they were still fairly young, and it was a young family. But they eventually got the store, or sorry, got the house in Woodfarm Acres, and seemed to settle there. Great group of friends around them, nice local. My dad's dad lived in Kennelsfort Road in Parmastown, so you know the local bar was the Silver Granite. So it was a great meeting place there for them.
Was it inevitable that yourself and your brother Connor would join the family business?
No, I don't think so. I didn't really know what I wanted to do. My dad was, after we'd done the markets, you know, the markets got saturated with ladies' dresses, and then he went into makeup, and then he went into a few different bits and pieces, hardware stuff. And then I was kind of, I was in, going to college in Moyle Park in Clondalkin. I think 17 when I left school. I wanted to get out type thing. And he'd decided then he was looking to go back into maybe barbering, but a ladies' hairdressing salon come up for sale down in DC's Road in Ballyfermot. Me and Connor went off and started. I decided I was going to be a ladies' hairdresser, so I went off and started training. Connor, that he'd left school about 16. He just didn't like school at all, so he went off to work for a company called Shape and Hair, and he'd done his trade in Shape and Hair. But at this stage, my dad had grown a couple of more ladies' salons, another one in Ballyfermot, two in Neilstown, one in Rolla. So we then ended up coming back into the fold and then starting to run it for him. He decided he wanted to finish at 45. So he left me and Connor to run the ladies' hairdressing salons.
And you haven't looked back?
No, I haven't looked back. No.
Over the years, between yourself and Connor, you've done a lot of different things. I mean, one is the movies. You ended up doing hair for movie sets.
It was
sets.
So weird. Again, my father in his younger days, like, would have... He specialised in hair pieces for bald men. He'd always taught us how to put on a wig, how to do a hair piece. So it always kind of was always in the back of our head, but we never kind of practised it. We'd done it the odd time. But then Braveheart come up and we got a call from a lady called Anne Dunn, who's a massive person in the film business, and asked, would we come out and do, you know, the wigs?
A lot there? Of hair.
That's all it was wigs,
was
wigs, hair and wigs, yeah. So that kind of gave us a bit of a love for going on that.
So did many of those... Mel Gibson's guys in Braveheart, were a lot of them hair pieces?
Yeah, a lot of them were hair pieces, funny enough. Now, the lads were crazy, like, they were the FCA, and, you know, they'd so many weeks down there, by the end of it, they, you know, they were shaving their own heads. They didn't care.
And then other famous celebrities
you would have done hair for. We would have bounced from that then on to, I think, Mal, like, it was period stuff that Anne specialised in and we loved, so any of the hair piece work and wig work, that was kind of the road we went down. So Mal Flanders was the next one, was Morgan Freeman and Robin Wright. And then Connor went on, I think, the Space Truckers.
Dennis Hopper was in that.
Dennis Hopper. Yeah, so the weird one was... we decided then we were going to go and buy, we still had the salons in Neilstown and Ballyfermot, but people were asking us, you know, where could we go to get a haircut? It wasn't convenient for them to go out there. So we knew we kind of had to see somewhere in city centre that we could bring them. And my mum was on the, like, looking, she always likes to buy the buy and sell or any newspapers to see who's RIP'd and who's not type thing. So she had sent us a shop for sale down in Grafton Street. There's a barbershop there, a gentleman's hair salon. And I said, in all my life, I've never seen a gentleman's hair salon in Grafton Street. So we went in, talked to Eddie and George. They were the two owners of it. George wanted to retire. They'd been in business together since 1946. And the condition on me taking the shop was that Eddie would stay on. So Eddie turned on the 20th of April, 90 years old. So he still comes in. His wife sadly passed away a few years ago. So he still looks after his autistic kid. David's about 66 years old. He gets him dressed in the morning, showers, shaves, and sends him off. He's in St. John of God's. Then he comes into me and does a few hours and goes home. So it keeps him, he's a great asset to the shop, but he's in Grafton Street all the time. He's a great character. But then we kind of, when we got the shop, we then started to find, Connor was on Space Truckers at the time, and I was asking Connor, you know, try and get Dennis Hopper to open the shop for us. And he goes, there's absolutely no chance that he's going to open the shop for us.
It was a hard ask. I mean, he's there on the set doing Dennis Hopper's hair.
Very hard.
And he's like,
ask.
Dennis, will you?
And what made it harder was the weekend we were going to open, Satche and Dennis, Satche was his minder for all his life, had flown the weekend before to Singapore to do, it wasn't a Heinz Beans commercial, but it was a Beans commercial where he sat in the bath and said something to the camera and he got £1 million quid for it. So Connor was saying, there's absolutely no way he's going to, you know, it'll cost too much, or we'll just, you know, he won't do it for us. But on the last day of shooting, he turned around and he said, I heard you and your brother are open the barbershop. He said, I'll open it for you. So he arrived down and, you know, it just gave us a great springboard from the very first day. It was a great little asset.
Somebody getting paid £1 million on a film. The other one it reminds me of is the Marlon Brando film in Ballycotton. Divine Rapture.
It was a great experience as well.
It wasn't quite a rap.
Get there in the end. Great little town, great people. It was just a great experience. Like Marlon Marlon has always travelled with his own makeup artist, Philip. Philip is the only makeup artist I've ever met in my life that doesn't have a brush. His wife, Philip's wife, would be Marlon's prompter, because Marlon has never learned a script in his life. I know that's probably common knowledge now. So she would be in the other room shouting, because Marlon had got to a certain age at this stage and he, you know, his hearing wasn't the best, but he'd be in the other room shouting the lines saying the lines into the earpiece to Marlon, and he'd be like, I can't hear. So he couldn't hear. But Philip was his makeup artist, so that was a great experience. And obviously Johnny Depp was on that, Deborah Winger was on it. So yeah, that was a great experience. That was a really good one to do.
Was it very, I mean, Connor still does for some very well-known people.
Connor would still look after Saoirse Ronan and James Nesbitt. Again, when time permits, if he can, you know, he's got two young kids now at the moment as well. So, you know, it gets a little bit harder when you get family. Like, you know, like I know in the early days when we were building the business, my wife Denise is a great asset as well, giving us the time to be able to go off and do these movies, because you're gone sometimes for like 4 or 5 months. And if you're in Dublin, you're up at the crack of dawn, you're up at 4 o'clock to get the wigs ready to go on and do a movie. So
you guys had your own plans about building your own network of shops, and you had the Grafton Barbers, and you would have had the shops out in Neilstown.
We started closing them at that stage, Richard. It kind of got like, fashion went, we were big into perming, would you believe, and perming was the thing at the time, and perming started going into fashion, and we didn't flip quick enough into colour, so they kind of started to fizzle out, and then we ended up just renting them out as other businesses type things. So we then decided we were going to go down the barber and route type thing and just, you know, concentrate on Grafton Street. We didn't think we were going to multiply them at that stage.
And you wanted to do things differently with Grafton Street.
Yeah, so like, again, we wanted it to be like a gentleman feel, so like, you know, leather seats, you know, smell a nice oak wood. We introduced the first internet connection into our stations as you were, like, it was the old dial up. I don't think you ever got on, but like it sounded as if you were getting on all the time, so I think. But they'd plug in their laptops, they did use
the hair would be cut just when you'd get on.
Do you know what I mean? So but again, like we were a big believer in, and again, it was a little trick of my dad's trading times. If somebody came into the shop to give them a tea or a coffee with a biscuit, and the idea being that once they got something for free that they couldn't get up and walk out if it was too busy. But we didn't do it for that reason, but we just did it to, you know, add another service. So we offer tea, coffee, like it was cappuccino, it was orange juice, beers, and then, you know, getting a shave. If we were doing an open razor shave, we'd always offer a whiskey and a cigar. Cigars we can't do obviously anymore because of the tobacco laws, but it was to try and give that feel of, you know, a gentleman's emporium.
When it comes to etiquette,
yes,
what are the real no-nos for somebody who's cutting hair? Yeah, things you just shouldn't do.
Yeah, asking too many questions. You know what I mean? It's good. Like, if you build up a bit of a repertoire with somebody, you know, you eventually, you know, get the first name terms with them. Like, we would still call people sir, you know, good evening, sir. You know, we still greet them in the right way. We'd still take their jackets. We'd still hang up their jackets for them and give them their jackets back. You know, Eddie'd be a great man in the shop that if you asked a question out of place, that he'd have a comb on his razor and he'd go, and he'd
what would be an out of place question?
Oh God, maybe asking somebody what they worked at, you know, he wouldn't appreciate that too much. And he always instilled in it as well that, you know, read the newspaper every morning, get the information, read the, like, you know, watch the news, have something to talk about with somebody, and, you know, be educated on what's going on in the day. So,
and in trying to do things differently, did you adopt your dad's idea of the jacuzzis? Did they make a comeback? No?
No, not yet.
You're thinking about it.
No. I'll give it a miss for a while, I think.
In a way, you would have caught a whole wave of sort of male grooming that was really taking off in Ireland in a way that it hadn't been in the past. But inevitably, fashion and hair fashion goes in cycles, doesn't it?
It does indeed.
Did you ever think the mullet would make a comeback?
No, I actually didn't. I'm nearly sporting a mullet myself at this stage, but I didn't think it would. And it kind of, you know, Paul Mescal probably, and you know, a lot of the footballers wearing it over the last couple of years. It's been around, it's been hovering around, you know, maybe 2-3 years, but hasn't really, you know, clicked in. But over the last 6-7 months, it's like everybody's getting it done, you know, not every second or third customer, but it's really popular. Your skin fade is kind of going out a little bit. We've had that for an awful long time type thing. So men tend to start letting their hair grow a little bit longer. Would you be surprised that there's a big push to try and get rid of beards at the moment?
There's too many of them. Too many beards.
So, you know, Gillette own, I think, before COVID.
I've come to this party too late, obviously. Yeah.
You're only starting to grow yours now. But before COVID, they owned 97% of the world shave market. So they've obviously been, you know, pushing to try and get people to start, you know, whipping off the beard again.
And what about Eddie, you were telling us about, who's 90? How's he on the new styles?
Yeah, he's actually brilliant. He's, you know, and seeing him, like, you know, does he really know what he's doing? But he keeps up with the rest of us, unfortunately.
So I remember there was a guy in school with me. He went to this old barber nearby, and he was telling me that he went in and he said, I want you to take a bit off here and keep that like that and a bit like that. And then the barber interrupted and said, hang on a minute, I'm the barber here.
Yeah,
you'll get what I give you. Those days are definitely gone.
Yeah, they are. Yeah, people kind of, you know, people's opinion, they act with their feet. You know what I mean? So if you're not looking after them, and if you're not, you know, if you're not giving them the right, like, the big thing that's changed is, you know, making sure people, like men, like years ago, probably wouldn't have put too much product in their hair. And you know, it's back to like how we introduced, like all of our stores have front wash basins. So we would encourage people to get their hair shampooed in the day. Most men go to a gym in the morning time now and they come in freshly washed. So you don't seem to have that same problem anymore.
And the business today, you have franchisees, you have outlets of your own. How many have you gone
in total? At the moment, we still run, our flagship is obviously Grafton Street, and we still hold that. We still hold Arniston, the department store, and funny, the one in South Ann Street, which was the second store we bought. Again, used to be called the Green Dolphin. It would have had Brendan Bean, and yeah, there was a lot of older guys that used to work in that shop. Most of them have passed. I think they're all passed now at this stage. But we kind of held them three stores just from a bit of a legacy point of view, and just they are city centre. Although city centre still struggling, we're still only at about 60% of trade in this, like in the direct city type thing. So,
and what is that, remote working, do you think?
I think it is. Yeah, I think it's just people, you know, not coming into the city as much. Remote working, a lot of offices still empty. So,
how many franchisees then do you have?
We're 55 now. So we're 55
around Ireland.
Around Ireland, yeah. We're opening up our fort in Cork now at the moment. We've another one opening in Nace.
Do you still cut hair yourself?
Yeah, I don't know about that.
It's a yes or a no job.
Yeah, I still do a couple of friends out in the warehouse type thing, but whether I do a good job or not, you'd have to ask them.
I won't tell them you said that. And Connor is still, he's still cutting
hair. He still loves to cut hair, yeah, he still snips away, yeah, he's...
And cutting hair, I mean, if Connor still, you know, cuts hair and does hair for celebrities, is there a huge pressure? Like, I mean, you guys, the president,
yeah,
is a client, isn't he?
He is, yeah. Michael D comes into Pembroke Street. So, yeah, he loves coming in. Andrew works in there and he's been a big fan of Andrew's for years.
So is there big pressure when you're cutting really some celebrity's hair?
No, what I love about the president when he comes in, like, we'll get a phone call to say he'll be there in 7 minutes, and he's there in 7 minutes coming from the park. And he obviously has to aid the camp, and, you know, there's about 4 or 5 people travel with him. But the great thing about the president...
They're all reading the newspaper while he's getting the haircut.
Yeah, well, one of them will sit in the car, one of them will stand at the door, and then a couple of them will come in with him. But the great thing about it is, and that's what I love the Irish people for, he'll walk in and anybody that's getting their haircut will stand up until he sits down. So even if they're halfway through a haircut with a gown on them, they'll all stand up. It's brilliant. Do you know what I mean?
What a
good
job.
Respect, yeah. Yeah, he's great.
What about the future then, Hugh? Where do you want to take the business? Do you want to keep growing?
Yeah, I think, yeah, our goal is to try and get into the UK. We opened up in 2000, just before COVID, up in Newry in the Buttercrane Shopping Centre. So it was kind of a little cheat test, but just to see if the brand would work in the UK type thing. So it's trading phenomenally, which is great. My daughter Elle moved over, sorry, my two daughters moved over in January 2023. And the pretense in them, Elle was going to go over and the two of them were going to go over and try and suss locations and see if we could get a feel for it over there. Elle kind of went off and started doing personal dressing with a girl called Violetta, who was Amy Winehouse's dresser. So she done that for about 6-7 months. She's just started a job in auctioneering, so I think she's going to go down that route. Amber ended up coming back to Dublin there, just thank God, in October last year, and she's just in the process of opening up her own coffee shop at the moment up in Swords. So doesn't want anything to do with me. So it's like they're kind of doing their own thing, which I'm a little bit glad of. Connor's two kids are Philippia is a big sportswoman. She plays for Shelbourne, and then Max is a fair bit younger, and he's just mad into football. So I don't know what way that's going to go.
They're all doing their own things.
They're all kind of doing, which happens in business. You know what I mean? When you know they see how hard me and Connor work, probably, and they're not that stupid to get involved.
And when it comes to the future, are you optimistic about the future of Dublin City Centre and other city centres because of remote working and a number of things like that? Things seem to be moving out into the suburbs more.
Yeah, things do. I think the big thing is you can't gauge it anymore. You know, you always knew you had to have extra staff in on a Thursday, Friday, Saturday. Like now you don't know. You we've extra people in today, but we could be absolutely dead because of the bank holiday weekend. Everybody might decide to go up. So it's just so erratic at the moment. And it's so hard. Like our VAT rate went from 9% up again, which is really hurting an awful lot. I chat a lot to Kyle Keaveney and Peter Mark. The idea, what we understood when the VAT rate was decreased, was that it would increase employment. And I think between Peter Mark and ourselves, everybody would have taken on one, maybe two extra barber stroke hairdresser. And this increase in VAT is just hurting. It's hurting an awful lot of people. And you're kind of saying to yourself, do I let go somebody now? Or, to try and balance it out again. So whether it'll ever change again, I don't know. But kind of a little bit weary about the future of that type thing.
Okay. Hugh McAllister of the Grafton Barbers, thank you very much for joining us on the programme.
Cheers, Richard. Thanks for having me.